Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. It's a cold, sad day in Washington. Of course, it's the day after a couple blizzards hit Washington, D.C. The first blizzard came in the form of the inauguration. We had some $40 million spent on 9 inaugural balls by corporations and individuals who are hoping for a piece of your tax money and are confident that the administration will do what they've done in the past and basically pay them the tax money that they want. And, of course, Washington was also hit, along with the rest of the Northeast, with a massive snow blizzard that hit us pretty hard. I think it was a pretty strong metaphor, in fact, for what the solid Kerry Northeast might expect, the chill they might expect over the next 4 years, as they have to contemplate another 4 years of George W. Bush. But in the back of our minds, in the back of those of us who did not support the president, in the back of the minds of the people of Washington, D.C., who voted 10-1 for John Kerry and against their most famous resident, there's this question. And that is, was the election free and fair? Now, of course, we've just witnessed a different inauguration in the Ukraine, where they had an unfair election, and the people marched in the streets, and they insisted on a new, fair election, and a different candidate was chosen for president of the Ukraine. But we also know what happened here 4 years ago, when the majority of Florida voters cast their ballots for Al Gore, and yet Florida was given to George Bush, and he received the presidency 4 years ago. So I know what the right-wingers say, and they say it to you, and they say it to me, and they say it on the blog. They say, get over it. Get over it. Move on. It doesn't matter whether or not the election was stolen. Move on. Or a few of them might say, you have no evidence the election was stolen. Those are the more honest ones, frankly. I mean, to say to move on, even if the election was stolen, I don't think is a very legitimate intellectual argument. But they say, look, you know, you don't have any evidence. Put up or shut up. If you don't have any evidence that there were unfair voting maneuvers in Ohio, the pivotal state, of course, if Ohio had voted, had their votes counted for John Kerry, he would have won the election. If you don't have any evidence, then, you know, you've got to accept that the people have spoken, and we've got to accept a Bush presidency for the next 4 years. And so, I accept the put up or shut up, the challenge, and I've invited to my program perhaps the foremost expert on what happened in Ohio in the presidential race. He is a PhD, he is a statistician, he's a professor, and he's someone who has spent an inordinate amount of time studying county by county, precinct by precinct, vote by vote, the statistics behind the Ohio presidential election. Perhaps the only person who knows more about what happened in Ohio than Dr. Phillips is the Ohio Secretary of State and Bush campaign chairman, Kenneth Blackwell. And he ain't talking. The Ohio Secretary of State's office will not give interviews on the election. They will not talk about software problems. They will not talk about anything related to the count. And I don't know what they have to hide, but Dr. Phillips has gone kind of like after a murder, where you put together the little pieces of forensic evidence, you look for a hair here, a fiber here, and he's going to talk in detail about what he's found. And I ask you to listen to him with an open mind, but feel free to call in and challenge, because that's what That's what we do here on The Scoop. Challenge him, challenge me, ask tough questions. Whether you believe him or not, it's your obligation to know what happened in Ohio and, by extension, what happened in the United States in the election of 2004. So if you want to call in, you know what to do. Dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can put a comment on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com, and I'll read your comment as well. But first, let me introduce you to Dr. Phillips. Dr. Phillips, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Oh, thank you for the introduction.
My pleasure. Well, I've given quite an introduction, and you've got some big shoes to fill here. You've got to explain in 1 hour or less what happened in Ohio with the presidential election. And you can go county by county or subject by subject. But I guess the overall question is, were there mistakes or problems in the counting of the electronic ballots in Ohio?
Well, there are three basic categories of problems that affected the results: voter suppression, refusal to count all the ballots cast, and alteration of the vote totals themselves. I gather it's the latter that you wish to start with.
Well, actually, I want to discuss all three, but yes, let's start first with altering the ballot vote totals. And let me remind my listeners, to those who haven't heard my show with Clint Curtis, and I hope most of you have, it's right there in my archive. You can check it out on my website. But Clint Curtis was a programmer, a pretty high-level computer programmer. He worked for a company by the name of Yang Enterprises, whose main lawyer and lobbyist was a guy by the name of Tom Feeney, who was then Speaker of the House of Florida, is now a congressman, Republican congressman from Florida. And Clint Curtis came on my show and has also given sworn testimony before the House Judiciary Committee, saying that it's very, very easy to stick in a little software patch that would change the vote count. Clint Curtis told us that all you have to do is, if your candidate's ahead, it leaves it alone. But if your candidate's behind, what it does is it increases to make the candidate you want to win by 51-49, which happened to be the margin in Ohio. And he said the way you do it, and it's very interesting how Mr. Curtis said this, because he said you would notice if you had a precinct that was overwhelmingly for Kerry suddenly switched to Bush, or one that was overwhelming for Bush switched to Kerry. That was something that would make people take notice. So he said what you do is very easy. Instead of manipulating the total votes, you manipulate the turnout. If you have a precinct that is overwhelmingly for Kerry, 90% of the votes are going for Kerry, you simply decrease the turnout from 80% to 60%. That decreases the Kerry margins. And then what you do is you increase the turnout in the Bush-favoring counties. And by doing that, you don't change the percentage in those precincts, but you can sure manipulate a lot of votes. So that was a very interesting thing that he told me. And I guess my question for you, Dr. Phillips, is there any evidence that this kind of thing may have happened in Ohio?
I find that explanation fascinating, because we have noticed in county after county after county in Ohio that the precincts that went heavily for Bush always have the highest turnout, and the precincts that went heavily for Kerry always have the lowest turnout. And it stumped me, not being a computer expert, how one could actually manipulate the percentage voter turnout, that's the ballots cast divided by the number of registered voters. Because it would seem that if you're going to alter the number of ballots cast in any precinct or ward, that the logbooks, the ledgers in which people sign in to vote in the polling stations would not match the official results.
Well, that's a very good point. You're absolutely right. If, in fact, they have done, as Clint Curtis suggested they could do, and by the way, Clint Curtis didn't he designed the patch. He didn't install the patch, so we don't know whether it was actually installed or not. You're absolutely right then, Dr. Phillips. The ledgers would show 127 people voted that day, but 156 votes were cast. Have you examined the ledgers? Is there any way to tell if this happened?
The Columbus Free Press does have the ledgers for one precinct in Perry County that had 124%
turnout. 124%
turnout? Yes, John Conyers noted this in his letter to Blackwell, and Blackwell had to back off and not certify those two precincts in Perry County.
Okay, let me just translate for those that aren't statisticians like yourself. 124% turnout, I think we all get it, but let me just make it clear for anyone who doesn't. That would mean that more people voted than the total number of voters in that precinct.
More ballots cast than registered voters, that is correct.
Okay, all right,
and
go ahead.
The ledgers show many names signed in the same handwriting. So that is a telltale sign, and that's the forensic evidence that we need to prove election fraud in the counties where the vote tallying machines were hacked.
Well, so there's,
now, the first county in which I was willing to claim this,
yeah,
because I really did not want to use the word hacked for a very long time, was Miami County. In Miami County, Ohio, on election night, two sets of election returns were reported. After 100% of the precincts had reported, another 19,000 votes were found.
Wait, after 100%, after all
correct
precincts reported?
After 100% of the precincts had reported in Miami County, another 18,615 votes were found. This increased Bush's margin by about 6,000 votes to exactly a 16,000 vote margin, 16,000. And the percentages for the candidates remained unchanged. Bush's percentage changed by 0.03%. Kerry's percentage was precisely the same to the 0.01%. And this, of course, raised suspicions about the veracity of the vote. Now, if you're going to increase the vote total by that much and therefore increase the percentage turnout, you do have a limit. You dare not increase the turnout across the boards, across the county, so high that there would be more than 100% turnout in any given precinct. You do have a ceiling. That's why you can still only steal a close election.
Well, it's happened in that one county, in Perry County,
right,
where it went over
100.
Right,
that was a different thing. It turns out that was a local race where somebody simply stuffed the ballot box, and I believe he's under investigation.
I see. So what was the total turnout then in Miami County?
In Miami County, I don't know if I have the figures before me for the total turnout, but the highest turnout in any given precinct was 98.55%.
That's pretty high.
That's pretty high.
How many people would...
There was another precinct. These were both in the same village,
yep,
in Concord. There was another precinct with a turnout of 94.27%. And in the same village, in a contiguous precinct, there was a turnout of 50 that went for Kerry.
So according to the official figures,
side by side, where the Bush precinct had turnouts of almost 100% and the Kerry precinct closer to 50. So that meant with a 98.55% turnout that they were saying that on election day, all but 10 registered voters went to the polls, no absentee ballots, no provisional ballots. They all went to the polls in that precinct and cast votes on election day. Well, Bob Fitrakis at the Columbus Free Press organized a canvas. They went door to door in that precinct and in a few hours' time identified 25 people who say that they did not vote.
Who were registered voters.
Miami County is proven fraudulent.
Okay, now let me get this straight. There's a precinct. They say that 98.55% voted in the official records. This
correct
is after increasing it by that additional 19,000 votes that came after 100% were counted.
Correct.
At the end of the day, you've got, according to the official figures, certified, the
certified
ones,
figures,
98.55% of Miami County voted, leaving approximately 10 voters in the entire one, excuse me, this
in precinct.
Leaving 10 voters in this entire precinct, registered voters, who did not cast a ballot, and we've already found 25 that didn't cast a ballot?
That's correct.
So we know it has to be fraudulent.
That's right.
Let me point out.
Proven fraudulent.
Let me point out one more thing. One of the things that I, in fact, criticized Ohio Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell for was he didn't allow voters to vote outside their precinct. I happen to believe, as they do in California, that if you vote in the wrong precinct, your vote should still be counted because, after all, at least for the president, it should still be counted. You're in the same state, and the precinct lines have been changed. I still support that policy, but I think it's important to note that because you were not allowed to vote outside the precinct, there is no explanation for what happened in that precinct in Miami County that I could think of other than fraud.
Oh, that is a very, very good point. We've never tied those two things together for this precinct. But yes, that preempts a possible argument. And, you know, one thing that is so insidious about this decision by Blackwell not to allow ballots cast in the wrong precinct to be counted as provisional ballots, it was allowed in the primary.
Interesting.
In March of 2004, but not allowed in the general election.
Interesting.
There are many polling stations in Ohio, especially in major cities, where 2, 3, 4, even 6 precincts vote in the same polling station.
So if you were at the wrong table,
rejected provisional ballots were cast in the right building,
wow,
but at the wrong table.
Very interesting. Dr. Phillips, we got a lot of people that are waiting to talk to you. So
right.
Let me say there is still one line open at 877-57-SCOOP. I'm going to get right to your calls. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Dr. Richard Phillips.
I don't know how long we can pretend anything but that this election was stolen. We have been defrauded. Incidentally, Mark, I can bring up the windows. The picture is moving. It says the Mark Levine Show, but I can't hear a word. That happens from time to time.
I'm sorry.
So I don't know if it's at your end or mine.
I will check that out. It seems to me on my end, it looks like it's working fine. My producer tells me it is working fine. So I apologize for that, Dave. It may be your computer. You will be able to hear the archive of this show after it's done. I assure you of that. While you're on the phone, if you'd like to ask a question of Dr. Phillips, please feel free to do so.
Yes, Dr. Phillips, we can't pretend. I mean, to me, this is at a point. We have been the victim of one of the worst crimes that we could possibly be. I feel, at the very least, civil accountability is what has to happen. Here in California, our Secretary of State, Kevin Shelley, made these machines they couldn't be used unless they could be recounted. We had one county requested a waiver, big county, San Bernardino County, a lot of poor people in that. They said they couldn't afford to modify all the machines in short order. So they were allowed the waiver. California went heavily for Kerry, and San Bernardino County went overwhelmingly for Bush, the one county that you couldn't verify a vote.
It's a solid point, Dave. Thanks very much for pointing that out. I appreciate
that.
Of course, I just want to be clear what Dr. Phillips knows and what he doesn't know. He's not a computer expert. He's a statistician. What he has done is he's examined, just like you apparently have, Dave, in San Bernardino County, he's examined precinct by precinct the actual figures. So he can't prove the computers have been hacked, but he can prove by statistics that something went wrong. At least so far, we've talked about Miami and Perry counties.
Well, they deliberately put machines in place that cannot be verified. You cannot recount them. Why do you think they're doing that, Mark? I mean, to me, that in itself is conclusive.
Well, thanks for your call, Dave. Let me give Dr. Phillips a chance.
I need to jump in here.
Yes, go ahead.
The vast majority of ballots cast in Ohio are recountable, something like 85% of them. Most of them are punch cards. Some of them are optical scan ballots. And it's only a very few counties in Ohio where the machines that have no paper trail are in place.
Would that include Miami and Perry counties?
Yes. So, I want to state something about Lucas County, where Toledo is located. The same type of machine was used in Miami County. And when I arranged the data by precinct and by ward, I found that there were, I believe it was 88 precincts with 88 precincts won by Kerry that had a lower percentage turnout than any precinct won by Bush. The bottom 88, all won by Kerry. 24 wards in Toledo. The 10 wards with the lowest turnout went overwhelmingly for Kerry by margins of several to one, you know, overwhelming margins, 80, 90% votes. In the 14 counties that were competitive, there was much higher turnout. And it looked to me as though the computers were probably hacked. There were precincts with 90% turnout in Lucas County as well. But I couldn't imagine, as I said, how one could alter the actual vote totals, the percentage turnout, without tipping everybody off. There are sign-in logs at these precincts
verify
it. We need to obtain the precinct logs for Lucas County, Miami County, Claremont County, Butler County.
Well, now this is
Warren
a solid
County.
Point. No, wait, this is a very important point, Dr. Phillips. What you're saying is that we can still prove this fraud. Ledgers exist.
That's right.
It's against the law to destroy them, I'm sure.
There are records as to how many people voted on election day. There will also be records to show whether or not the reported voter registration is accurate. You know, there are precincts in Miami County, for instance, one of which had 2.5 times as many ballots cast as in 2000. Another had 3 times as many ballots cast as in 2000. There are precincts in some of the counties I have named that had voter registration more than double in 4 years. This is not credible.
Dr. Phillips, there's so much information here. We're just going to have to take it piece by piece.
That's right.
Let me just ask you, though. Dave made a point about California. His point was that the Secretary of State of California said we can't trust machines without paper records.
Correct.
And so he required every county to fix it. As Dave has pointed out, there was one county, San Bernardino County, that got a waiver, and that one went overwhelmingly for Bush.
Well, it may have gone overwhelmingly for Bush in 2000.
Right,
well.
Exactly.
Be careful.
No, that's absolutely right. But my question is, extrapolating this to Ohio, you've just pointed out that 85% of the counties in Ohio, of the elections, it would have been very hard to manipulate because you have punch card or optical scan. You actually have a paper record.
It's easy to manipulate. It's just that a proper forensic investigation that obtains the necessary evidence could bring about criminal indictments.
I see. Well, I guess my question is, do you find more discrepancies, more statistical abnormalities in the 15% of Ohio that does not have paper receipts than you do in the 85% that does?
No. Everything was tried everywhere. Every imaginable methodology that was possible to utilize in Ohio was utilized. Let me tell you about Mahoning County, where Youngstown is.
Before you do, we got to go to commercial break. Dave, I want to thank you very much for your call. I know there are callers hanging on. Please keep hanging on. We've got to go to a break, and we'll come back with more of Dr. Phillips' astounding statistical forensic work and your calls at 877-57-SCOOP right after these messages.
Howdy.
Credit card companies love you. Giants like Citibank, Chase Manhattan, and NBNA constantly fill our mailboxes with little love letters, wooing us to accept their cards. But, like so many love affairs, once you've signed up, the companies suddenly show an ugly, grasping, selfish side of their personality. What you learn is that credit firms seem to enjoy penalizing their customers. For example, I recently paid a monthly bill of about $1,000 on an MBNA card, but I accidentally wrote a check that was $10 short. The next month, MBNA hit me for an interest finance charge of $21. That's an interest of more than 200% on a $10 debt. Oh, they calmly explained when I called, we don't just assess the penalty on the amount you were short, but on the entire $1,000 that you owed for the month, even though you already had paid $990 of it. Check the fine print of your agreement, they said, lovingly. Perhaps you, like me, try to pay your balance in full each month to avoid such usurious interest rates. But now, they've invented a most unloving trick. Most of us assume that our bills are not due until 30 days after we get them in the mail. The banks, however, have oh so quietly shrunk this common grace period to 20 days or less. Also, Citibank and MBNA are among those that now include sneaky fine print specifying an hour that your payment is due, say 1 p.m. on the 20th. Miss it by a minute, and they can whack you with a late fee of up to $39, plus penalty interest rates as high as 30%, even though you think you've paid your bill on time and in full. This is Jim Hightower saying, they stiff their own customers because it's hugely profitable. Credit card banks collected nearly $15 billion from us in penalty fees last year. To fight back, call U.S. PIRG, 212-546-9707.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And we've got a listener listening live in Finland. That's the country. That's not some part of the United States. The country of Finland. His name is Jacob, and he writes on the blog, "Mark, your plea is not worth the effort. I've had conversations with educated Americans, even those closely related to me of the same basic background and who now have senior professorial posts in American universities. They cannot see past their noses, and even a plea to look at the 101-page Conyers report falls on deaf ears." Remember, John Conyers is the ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee. In fact, he was here on this show talking about some of the Ohio problems. You can check that out in the broadcast archive at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Jacob writes, "And if I can get it here in the Arctic, there is no reason it cannot be obtained in an American university. I think Americans have to live with your misery for the next 10-plus years." Wow. You know, if people in Finland can see it, I'm not sure why Americans won't at least take the time to listen to someone like Dr. Richard Phillips, who studied the data, and to try to understand what's going on. Maybe my caller here can help me understand. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Dr. Phillips. Caller, you there? Did we lose this caller? Caller, you there? I'm afraid we lost this caller. All right, well, Dr. Phillips, you were telling us about Mahoning County when we went to break. Please.
Yes, I have a few quick points I want to make here.
Go ahead.
Before I go to another caller. Mahoning County, this was the number one point made by John Conyers in his speech on the House floor during the challenge to the election. Mahoning County, the only one in Ohio that had touchscreen machines, they were programmed to default to candidate Bush. If the voter did not successfully override the default choice of the computer, he'd be casting a vote for Bush, and in fact, it happened for other down-ticket races as well.
So,
sometimes the screen would hop from the Democrat candidate to the Republican candidate. That wasn't supposed to happen. The default choice was supposed to be unseen, and the voter would be unwittingly casting a vote for the Republican. We know this is so from one precinct where sometimes the name of Bush would pop up when voters would press carry. Other times they were unable to cast a vote for president at all, but there were no undervotes. Every person who attempted to vote in that precinct had a vote counted for president.
Now, again, this is strong stuff, and I want to
repeat
what you said I'm really just repeating it, giving people a chance to let it sink in. What you're saying is that people went to cast a ballot, and some of them tried to cast a ballot for president and came away complaining that they were unable to cast a ballot for president.
Right.
And yet when the returns came in, there were zero in this particular – is it a precinct or a county?
Precinct.
In this precinct, there were zero in this precinct ballots that had no registration for president. So in other words, the people came away, either all of them were lying, and that's kind of strange to imagine, or the fact that they didn't cast a ballot, that ballot was cast for George W. Bush.
That's right. I talked to one of the witnesses
on the
phone. Yes, please.
Tell me, what did he or she say?
Well, essentially this. I mean, I just wanted to verify the report. And I have since received 73 similar reports from Broward County, Miami-Dade County, and Palm Beach County in Florida of screens hopping from Democrat to Republican candidates or not allowing a vote to be cast. Not just the presidential race, but the Senate race as well.
You know, prior to this
election,
I actually, and I'm going to put it back on my website after the broadcast today, I posted, it's a joke, really, a joke little thing about the Florida elections and how every time you tried to cast a ballot for Kerry, it went for George W. Bush. I'm going to post it again, folks. It'll be on my website
in about
45 minutes. And I meant it as a joke, but apparently it's no joke.
Some other information about the counting devices, as you asked.
Yeah.
The Triad Company, which manufactures many of the punch card machines, they are established in most of the counties in Ohio. And it turns out that they not only provide the voting machines and the counting devices and service those devices and program those devices, but they also provide the election results. We have had to fight county by county to get the election results from boards of elections. The Secretary of State does not provide them on a precinct level. Some counties are more cooperative than others, but in two cases, the counties, instead of faxing or mailing or sending us an electronic file, simply forwarded the results as emailed to them by Triad, complete with the cover letter from the company vice president.
So in other words,
do you have a problem with that? A private company provides the election results to the counties in Ohio?
So apparently the counties go and the electronic goes, I guess, by email. So this would be a way, certainly you could tap into a system, but they send the results to Triad and then Triad sends it back to them, saying this is how they cast in your precinct?
Right. Triad sends the results to the counties, to the boards of elections, said, here's your election results as requested.
So the counties sitting there, I mean, I know those old lever machines where you go in and you have those big levers and you push the thing back. It's 100-year-old technology.
And it works.
I've seen that, those machines, and I know in the back they got these counters.
That's right.
And it shows 123 and 186. It's right there. What you're telling me is that the people in the precinct didn't know how their own precinct voted until the company that made the machines told them how?
Apparently not.
Wow.
I mean, Triad even provides the websites to these boards of elections.
I want to ask you also a little bit about a Triad software patch, but let me get to a caller first who's been hanging on. Caller,
okay.
You're on the line with Mark Levine and Dr. Phillips. Caller, you there? Did I lose this caller again?
Lord.
Oh, yes, caller, you're there. Caller? I'm not sure why we're not getting this caller.
We have technological problems today.
Oh, really? Who's this?
Rather like elections.
Oh, this is Dr. Phillips. Well, yes, I don't know why we're not getting this caller. I apologize for that. Keep trying, folks, at 877-57-SCOOP. Technical problems do happen from time to time. I do want to ask you, Dr. Phillips, about the Triad software patch. My understanding is that this same company, Triad, that we were discussing, actually came in after the election and added or changed or modified the software on their computers. Now, before the election, it makes sense. You might want to do an update, some kind of fail-safe thing, but is it true that after the election they came in and modified the computers?
There are sworn affidavits from Lucas County and from Hocking County. I always want to say Hacking County, where Triad officials came in and did something to the machines. These affidavits, as I recall, are from Board of Elections members who questioned why Triad would need to alter the machines. It does bring an interesting story up. Three southwestern Ohio counties, the ones that surround Hamilton County where Cincinnati is located, these three counties are Butler, Warren, and Claremont. These three counties gave to Bush his entire margin of victory. He
really?
Won these three counties by a bigger margin than he is said to have won the whole state.
By more than 120,000.
Correct.
And I'm up.
Correct. And I have long been suspicious of these results. I have compared those election results to 2000. I have compared them to the Chief Justice race. And I cannot possibly explain the vote totals for George Bush. And so I was willing to say that these votes were altered, that in the occasional township that's unaltered, Kerry might run 14% ahead of Al Gore's percentage, and yet be overwhelmed across the county.
Well,
he got fewer votes than an African-American woman running from Cleveland, a municipal judge, running for Chief Justice against a well-financed Republican white male incumbent.
Well, okay, but maybe Dr. Phillips, they just hadn't heard of this, who the president was.
No, you missed my point.
Okay.
Kerry got fewer votes than she did in these counties, in a race that drew a lot fewer votes than president. There's a lot of people who don't vote for Chief Justice who are going to vote for president.
That's
yet
true.
If you are to believe these election results in these counties, Bush got all the votes from all the people who voted Republican for Chief Justice, all the people who didn't vote for Chief Justice, and still got 13,500 votes from people who also voted for Ellen Connolly. Also, these results don't match up with 2000.
How do they not match up with 2000?
I never believed the results. Well, it turns out that there is now a statement from three observers to the so-called recount in Claremont County, where they used optical scan machines. You know, you fill in a little mark on the ballot like an Iowa test, and it gets run through a scanner. These people swear and have filed the complaint with the Board of Elections in Claremont County that there were little white stickers over the Kerry marks on the ballots when they ran them through the machine during the recount. And this would get the second count to match the first count. And they
Wait a minute. Let's get this straight. When you use optical scanner machines, it's kind of like when you take the SAT test.
You fill in
the ovals,
with a pencil.
A, B, C, D. And, of
right.
course, the computer that counts them sees the black mark for Carrier Bush and registers a vote for
correct.
Carrier Bush. If you were to put a white sticker on top of that black mark, it would be like an empty ballot.
That's right, and then they fill in the mark for Bush and run it through the ballot, and then it matches the election night results.
Wait. So the people are saying that not only did they cover white over the Kerry, but they actually filled in the oval for Bush?
That's what they say. Now
who says this?
The recount observers for Kerry, the Green, and the Libertarian parties. There were three people who signed this statement. I've seen it. Again, maybe it's true, maybe it isn't, but we need the evidence. We should be able to look at the optical scan ballots in Claremont County and see if this is so. If there really are stickers on these ballots, there will be DNA on the stickers, and there will be a different graphite in the Bush marks than the other marks on the ballots.
That's true, and frankly, also, you could have the original ballots, and simply if there's two black marks, one over Kerry with some sticky stuff around it, and one over Bush, that would prove it very clearly. Now, have they offered in Claremont County to give you the actual optical scans to show you the record, the evidence?
I'm not quite clear who's got the standing to obtain these things. It seems like it's really the job of Kerry and Edwards. Maybe John Conyers would have the standing to obtain the evidence.
Well,
but it's not easy to get this stuff.
I'll tell you this. As someone who worked in Congress, I'm afraid I'll tell you who has standing, and I'm afraid it's not an answer that I or my listeners want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But the Congress would have standing, and that would be both House and Senate Judiciary Committees. Unfortunately,
right.
they're controlled by Republicans who do not want to investigate this election.
Conyers held hearings as the ranking Democrat.
Yes, he did, but Conyers does not have subpoena power. What
I
happens
see.
Is, and I know this because I work
okay.
there, the majority only has subpoena power. And
mm-hmm.
how many subpoenas have they issued against the Bush administration to date? The answer is zero.
That was a good guess. Yeah.
They issued about 1,000 against Bill Clinton in his time. We have to take another break.
Okay.
This is pretty heady stuff here. If you want to call in, please try. I don't know what happened before, but please call in at 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with this stunning account by statistician and professor Dr. Richard Phillips right after these messages.
call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win.
I know everything. Languages? Yes. Boiling points? Celsius and Fahrenheit? Yes. World capitals? Please. So, not too long ago, I tried to get a refi, and it got turned down. And this is the best part. The loan officer says to me, sir, do you know what your credit score is? So, I looked at her and said, tell me, do you know what the population of Liechtenstein is? Huh? Do you? She didn't.
Get in the know. Check out ScorePower from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for only $14.95. And knowing that is how you get the credit you deserve. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Well, now I have my credit score up to 760, the same number of days it took Frenchman Michel Lapointe to circle the globe on a bike. Yeah, I'll bet you didn't know that.
Get the power. Score power.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine. We are taking one last look at what happened in Ohio during the presidential elections. The Republicans say, get on, move over it. I should say, get over it, move on. They're saying all kinds of things. But in any case, I'm not quite on yet. I wanted to invite a professional statistician, probably the single greatest expert on the Ohio election controversy, to come on air to address some of the many, many problems that happened in Ohio. And if you want to call in and question him, you're welcome to do so at 877-57-SCOOP. You're also welcome to contribute on the blog. Just go to www.radioinsidescoop.com. I know a lot of you listen to the program at the website live. And also archived some. We got some podcasters that like to listen to the version after it's archived. And I read what a lot of you have written there, and I just want to respond briefly. We got a comment here by Doug and one by Shlomit that are attacking John Kerry's campaign. And you know, I think your criticisms are pretty valid. Doug is basically arguing that John Kerry didn't do enough to talk about a living wage, to talk about caring for those the working poor. He thinks that if John Kerry had mentioned that, he would have beaten George Bush in a landslide. I don't know, Doug. I think there was a lot of talk about living wage for working people, equality, opportunity for the disadvantaged. Maybe you don't think there was enough. I'm not sure. Shlomit is talking about how Kerry sort of strong-armed the process at the Democratic National Convention and tried to basically control what was said there. I know most candidates usually do that. I guess my feeling, Doug and Shlomit, is not so much that you're wrong, but that it's irrelevant to the question we have today. If the machines were hacked if we don't have a fair election? That is a much greater, broader question than the points you raised, which are valid political points, valid criticisms that you're welcome to bring up. In fact, we can talk about it on another show. I'm happy to talk about where the Democrats go. In fact, I think I'll do a show on that. But my point is larger. If we can't trust the machines, then I'm afraid that our blogger from Finland has it right. If we can't trust the voting machines, we may not have a democracy for the next 10 years. In any case, my guest is Dr. Richard Phillips. He is a statistician. He's a professor. He has been examining the data in Ohio, and you're welcome to call in, question, or challenge him. I do want to read to you, Dr. Phillips, one more comment directly on point on the blog. And Skip writes, those extremely high Ohio turnouts Dr. Phillips talked about reminds me of the explanation, quote-unquote, of why the exit polls were off in Ohio. People, by the way, have never been able to explain exactly why the exit polls were off in Ohio. But Skip says some said it was because enthusiastic Democrats voted early and therefore they wouldn't have shown up in the exit polls on Election Day. But Skip points out that this explanation ignores the strong statistical correlation between the exit polls and counted vote in the non-battleground states and the red shift in the battleground states. In other words, what Skip is saying is that if you look at the exit polls from people in California and other states that were not battleground states, they match the final results, whereas they don't match it in the battleground states. And I'd like to know, Dr. Phillips, have you examined the exit polls? Are you able to confirm what Skip writes here on the blog?
A couple of days ago, I was sent exit poll data from all 50 states, finally have it. And it was well over 30 states where there was a shift where Bush got a substantially higher percentage of the vote than he had in the exit polls. I really don't care to comment on it right now because I was busy with my Cleveland study and haven't really examined that table. But I do know that Warren Mottoski, who is the very exit pollster whose work convinced the world that the Ukrainian election was fraudulent, seems to be disbelieved in the United States when he had exit polls showing Kerry the winner in Ohio, New Mexico, Iowa, and Nevada, and only a tenth of a percent behind in Florida. I really need to get to the subjects of voter suppression
and
refusal to count the uncounted votes. I'll say these things quickly so we can get more callers. One way, of course, to affect the turnout is through voter suppression. One of the ways this was done in Ohio was through the purging of the voter rolls, which is something that you need to do from time to time. People die and move away. For instance, in Lucas County, where Toledo is located, 27,000 people were removed from the voter rolls, and some of those were legitimate voters who had not died and not moved away. We do need to obtain comparative lists so we can see if it was an honest, nonpartisan attempt to clean up the voting rolls, or if precincts that typically vote Democratic were targeted. I don't have any direct evidence that they were, but the evidence should be readily available. I noticed that the two major reasons that provisional ballots went uncounted is because people voted in the wrong precinct, which might have been at the right table but in the wrong building,
right,
or because people had been removed from the voting rolls and then they were given a provisional ballot and then the ballot didn't count because they weren't registered. So what's the point of a provisional ballot if the two major reasons for issuing it are grounds to disqualify the ballot?
What's important, probably
35,000 provisional ballots in Ohio that have not been counted.
What's important about what you point out, of course, is that these are true Ohio voters. These aren't people that are dead. These are people who are complaining that they're... Now, let me ask you this. If I went in Ohio and I voted provisionally and I came in on Election Day and they didn't have my name on the ballot, and I asked to vote provisionally, which, by the way, I should tell you that Mark Levine, did some of this election protection work in Virginia, and a woman wasn't precisely that category. Her name wasn't on the ballot, on the voting rolls, and we allowed her to vote provisionally. But let's say I were a Ohio voter, and my name's been taken off the rolls. I'm allowed to vote provisionally. Am I able to find out? Am I able to call in to Kenneth Blackwell?
Yes, they have lists of exactly which persons had their votes counted and which didn't.
Okay.
This is obtainable, and we need a large team of forensic investigators to go over these lists. Also, there should be obtainable old and new voter registration lists. Other ways of suppressing the vote are time-honored techniques like broken voting machines, polling stations literally running out of ballots and turning people away, ballots not being placed in the ballot boxes or in any secure location, and long lines not designated by precincts. So people might stand in line for an hour in a polling place, get up to the table and said, and be told, no, you're in the wrong line. You need to go to the back of that line over there.
Or a much simpler explanation where you take areas that are high carry supporting locations, particularly African-American areas, and you have very few voting machines.
Yeah, that's my next point. In Columbus, this is what happened. There was an alteration compared to previous elections of the allocation of the voting machines. There was a discriminatory allocation where inner city, primarily African American, heavily Democratic precincts in the city of Columbus received fewer voting machines per registered voter than the wealthy Republican suburbs of Franklin County. And this already discriminatory list of machines that were slated by serial number to be distributed on election day was also altered.
But we don't know who altered them.
There are 76 voting machines that were crossed out on that list, on an already discriminatory list, that were not delivered. All 76 of these machines were slated for precincts in Columbus. None of these 76 machines were slated for the suburbs. The odd, since three-fifths of the precincts are in Columbus, 60%. The odds against that happening by random chance are 0.6 to the 76th power. You can go figure it out on your pocket calculator.
That would be about a trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth.
It is quadrillions. It's in the quadrillions to one. Also, there were 68 voting machines that were deliberately withheld in addition that were just sitting in the warehouse. 20 of those machines are actually overlaps, but it makes a total of 124 voting machines that didn't go to anyone.
They just
no
sat in warehouses.
At all. They just withheld them on election day.
I remember.
And that's why you see these long lines.
Yes.
People standing in the rain 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours to vote. Would you do that? Would you stand in the line for 8 hours in the rain to cast a vote for president?
You know,
especially when it might not even count.
Yeah, no, I would, but I'll tell you, I'm healthy. If I were 85 years old,
yeah,
and I had the flu, or I thought I could catch the flu, it'd be I'd be risking my life.
That's right.
To try to vote.
Didn't even have chairs for the elderly to sit
no.
down.
I remember very clearly on Election Day watching, and of course the exit polls had showed a Kerry victory, not just in Ohio but in Florida and even in some states like that were thought to be more pro-Bush. And I remember watching those, and then I remember seeing the long lines in Ohio and seeing
right.
drenching rain. They didn't even take the people inside
no.
where they could wait
no.
and not be in the rain. People standing for 4 hours, 5 hours, young and old, and thinking how many people are literally risking their lives
mm-hmm.
in order to try to cast a vote in America. But then, Dr. Phillips, comes the next question, because in the Ukraine, when people risked their lives to vote and found out that there was a fraudulent election, people marched in the streets,
that's right.
overturned it. In Yugoslavia, I remember 4 years ago when the court said, oh, Milosevic won, and the people said, no, you got to count the votes first, and they burned the parliament. Why is it that Americans, some of whom, many of them, and they are patriotic, were willing to stand hours in the drenching rain, why aren't they marching in the streets now? Why isn't the media covering what you and I are talking about? I mean, have you been on CBS or ABC or CNN or any of these?
Haven't been interviewed by any television station. This is my seventh radio show. My words have not appeared in print in any newspaper that I know of, except perhaps the Baltimore Chronicle. I don't know if that's online or is in print as well. But no, they basically call us wild-eyed internet conspiracy theorists, sore losers, sour grapes.
And
get over it, go home, quit your whining, try again in 4 years, which is what they told us in 2000.
But you're a trained statistician. Let me ask you this.
Right.
Is there anyone, any other trained statistician, who's examined the figures you have and said, look, Dr. Phillips, I respect you, but you're wrong on this count. You're wrong on this count. Have they taken up the battle? Anyone? Ohio Secretary of State?
I don't know of anyone who has. I figured that if I was wrong on Mahoning County with the touchscreen machines defaulting to Bush, they would tear me limb from limb. The very fact that it hasn't been criticized verifies that I am correct. In fact, the Columbus Dispatch verified the story as well by saying it was only 25 machines and it was an unknown number of votes. Well, that's verification in the mainstream press. I also want to talk about refusal to count the votes.
Please do.
There are still more than 92,000 uncounted ballots in Ohio that were cast on Election Day.
I thought they counted all of them.
No. Most of those are punch cards. Over 92,000 remain uncounted. And in seven of the eight counties that have the highest percentage of uncounted ballots, ballots that were cast but no vote has been recorded for president in the vote tallies, in seven of the eight counties that I have... that have the highest percentage of uncounted votes. I have looked at those counties, and in every case, these ballots are highly concentrated in precincts that voted overwhelmingly for John Kerry.
In every single case?
Every single case.
How many are we talking about? Seven, eight, ten? Give me an approximation.
Well, in seven counties, counties that contain Cleveland, Cincinnati, Dayton,
yep.
Akron, Canton, and two other fairly urban counties, Trumbull County and Lorain County. And I have, and a very conservative estimate says that Kerry would pick up, he would eat away at Bush's margin by 16,000-17,000 votes if these ballots were counted as well. It could be much more than that. That's the most conservative number I can come up with.
Now,
let me tell you something.
Yeah,
I assumed from the Florida experience that these ballots would have hanging and dimpled and pregnant chads that would be an indication that the voter had intended to vote for Kerry. But there's a more insidious thing that we might find. Two things I need to tell you about.
Please.
In Ohio, due to somebody's cockeyed idea of fairness, the order in which the candidates' names appear on the ballot must rotate from precinct to precinct. In polling stations where more than one precinct vote in the same location, this begs for fraud. You give a voter a punch card for his precinct and you send him to the wrong machine. And that person will be casting a vote for the wrong candidate all up and down the ballot. In one case, if the votes shift in one direction, the Kerry votes go to Bush. The Bush votes go to the Libertarian candidate, but if it's a precinct where Bush has almost no support, you won't notice it. There won't be a large number of votes for the Libertarian candidate.
Well, actually,
conversely,
yeah, go ahead.
If Bush votes go to Kerry, and again, this only works in precincts where Kerry's getting 95-98% of the vote, the Kerry votes will disappear into the void. They go to the candidate disqualified column that used to be for Ralph Nader. And those votes are calibrated, the machines were calibrated to count those votes as zero. All through Cuyahoga County, that column is zero. No matter how many votes for John Kerry were siphoned off into that column, they are not reported. We also have sworn affidavits from two voters in Cleveland, and there are three complaints on the Election Protection website from Cuyahoga County as well, stating that voters were given punch cards already punched for Bush. If they put that card in the machine and voted for Bush, they'd simply be verifying the ballot that was already cast for them. If they punched a hole for Kerry, they'd be casting an overvote with a punch for Bush and Kerry and spoiling their ballots, and the machines would spit it out, and no vote would be counted for any office
now,
whatsoever.
Including the 92,000 would be then not just undervotes, but also overvotes.
Correct. And there will be a if we can look at these ballots, which no one has seen, there won't just be pregnant and dimpled and hanging chads for Kerry. There are going to be a lot of ballots cast for candidate disqualified, and there are going to be a lot of overvotes for Bush and Kerry.
Dr. Phillips, we only have a couple minutes left.
Right.
You're such a wealth of information. Tell me this. Where are those punch card ballots right now, the ones that are the evidence of what might be election fraud?
That is a really, really good question, but I want to look at them. I want to look at all this evidence.
So we don't know where they are right now. The Secretary of State has
them. I don't personally know where they are. Presumably they're in the boards of elections. But let me say something. You know, I voted Republican for governor. I voted Republican for senator. I voted Republican for Congress. This is not about John Kerry. I don't have a lot of love for the Democratic Party. I think the winner should win, the loser should lose, and the people should rule.
Well, I can't have said it better myself. Dr. Phillips, you've given very persuasive arguments.
Thank you.
We still have one more minute, and I want to ask you the overall, the whole thing. If you add up all the votes, do we know for a fact who won Ohio?
No, we don't. I am not convinced that Bush received a majority of the ballots cast on Election Day. I do believe, from all of the evidence I've accumulated from 15 counties, that if everyone who was duly registered and attempted to vote on Election Day had been allowed to vote and had their ballots counted, that Kerry would be president of the United States.
I can assure you the Republicans will do their best never to allow every registered voter who wants to cast a ballot to be able to cast their vote. And I tell you, I call out to all my Republicans, and I know we have Republicans who listen to this broadcast, to please, whatever your political beliefs, whatever you think about John Kerry and George Bush, you need to demand democracy in America. You need to demand that every vote be counted, because otherwise, even if you just want to stop hearing Democratic whining, right? And I've heard those things on my website too. The only way to do it is to have a fair and accurate vote count. I've talked in this program how to do that. One way is to have Rush Holt's bill, which would have a paper record. Another way is to examine the source code before it comes out. And the third way, and this is on my program with Michael North, would actually use automatic teller machines to count our votes. There's lots of ways to fix this, but what Dr. Phillips is telling us is that there's a lot of anomalies that we'll never, ever be able to know for sure. Dr. Phillips, that hour flew by very fast. Thank you so much for all the time and effort. I know you've worked on the Ohio lawsuit, which I understand now that the election's over isn't really going anywhere. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good fight. And I'll have you again on the Inside Scoop.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's it. Again, it went very quickly. Tomorrow we've got the first live televised show here on The Scoop. We've televised a couple shows. We're now ready to go live. Of course, it's Debate Tuesday, and all you have to do is tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. You can listen on the radio. You can listen on the web at www.radioinsidescoop.com. And if you're sitting in Northern Virginia, all you have to do is turn on Channel 10 on Cox Cable and watch it live. Tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of The Inside Scoop.